Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and changemakers. If there is a tool that I've been skeptical of because of its popularity, it's the Enneagram. Fortunately, Aaron Bowdy is a certified Enneagram teacher and trainer ready to dispel my skepticism and broaden my thinking and understanding of what the Enneagram is and is not. Aaron shares her curiosity for people, infinite possibility, and a limitless approach to life in this conversation. She unpacks the Enneagram, the difference between a tool and using the tool, and how ultimately it honors who you are. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/571. What are you endlessly curious about?
The answer seems both simple and really complicated, and it's people. I'm just so fascinated and curious and in awe of people, what motivates them, why we do what we do, and how to make more space in the world for that.
Ooh. I mean, you're speaking my language here. Like, so what's the secret to making more space for people?
Making more room for ourselves.
Now you're really speaking my language.
And it's the hardest work we'll ever do, right?
Like, yes.
To really, really have that much capacity to be aware and patient and kind and compassionate to ourselves so that there's enough room for us to do that work with others.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And as you said, it is the hardest work because, you know, like what goes on between our ears is both vicious and exciting all at the same time.
Absolutely. And I would have to sort of argue that it's the most rewarding work too. I think once we figure out the magic sauce for us individually, we can get to what I think about is sort of like a recovered and repaired state more quickly. And then it's like, oh, this was worth it. This feels good. I can do this again.
Yeah. So when did you discover your magic sauce?
I think I still am.
That's fair.
It's a perpetual cycle. And I think that's the beautiful part about humanity and our existence and the experiences that we have is that as we evolve, so should our tools and resources and how we move through the world in that way and making more space. And so when it was just me in the world and I was only responsible for me, it looked a certain way, but you know, having a family and children, and I have my oldest has special needs. And so that, you know, sort of undid everything I thought I knew and made me get to work again and just continues to sort of evolve into these new iterations of self. So as soon as I think I've got it figured out, something changes.
Oh, for sure. Well, and one of the interesting things that I took away from your website is that you said that you're a lot. Mm-hmm. And is that part of learning what your magic sauce is and really accepting yourself?
Yes, I think so. Especially for the particular way that I've learned to cope in the world. You know, the Enneagram is a tool for us to name that coping. We don't need it. We don't need a tool to name it. We can find this in our own way and through our own language. It's just something that helps me do it a little faster. And so when I was able to sort of put language to my patterns and how I show up in the world, I recognized how hard I worked to make myself smaller, to make other people more comfortable. And it's been a road, often bumpy, for me to be okay with my a-lot-ness, my complexity, and all of how that looks, I think, in life. Because I still feel pretty conditioned to like tone it down, you know?
Right. Well, I'm glad you're not toning down and that you are expanding into the space because like the world needs people like you that want to help others and help them to get clear, get wild and get moving. I love that tagline.
Thank you. It's like in my soul. So I'm from Montana originally. That's where I've spent a good portion of my childhood, getting lost in the woods. And I love everything about the wilderness. And what I realized as I transitioned to corporate America and I followed sort of the prescription for what it looked like to be successful, I lost everything about me that was wild, that was unique and different, right? That's in that sort of act of becoming smaller. And so when I was sort of breaking free from all of this, the place I kept going back to was envisioning what it was like for me to sort of be wild and free in Montana. And I was like, man, what would it be like if we could create a space for folks where they could get really, really clear? And for me, that's like what the moon does, right? In the West, the moon is ginormous, you know, and it's like, it lights the way in the middle of the dark. And for me, a little bit, that's what the Enneagram feels like, is it's clarity. It's like, oh, I see myself clearly in a way I've not been able to before. And then the idea of, with that clarity, I get to break some rules. I get to do life my way. And what would that look like for me to be wild and be free? And then our work is to take action, to take steps forward. And so that to me is what sort of the mountains signify, is our ascension. And there's no destination. And I think that's what the mountains show us, is that they're, you know, it's this constant journey of struggle and beauty at the same time.
Right. Oh, I love that. Because not only, I mean, if you look at the mountain as the summit, that's only half the journey. You still got to get down safely.
Right. And any good mountain has a range, right? So then there's another one and another one and another one. So our work isn't to get to the top and end or get down to the bottom. It's how do I keep taking a step forward?
Yeah, I love the picture of getting wild and just like, I can't even imagine the impact that it has on people who have only known corporate America and the experiences of being, you know, locked in a soulless dark room with artificial lighting. You know, like, how do people come alive when they start to experience that wildness?
It's so beautiful. And I still have to remind myself of this work. Like, I still have to remind myself that, oh, this is my work, my business, my way. I get to do it in a way that serves me, right? It's still practice for me. And so when I'm sitting across from someone, usually virtually, you know, it's this beautiful thing around, well, what do you want? What do you value? And how can we create it? And it's shocking to people to really think like, oh, I get to make choice, you know, because there's so much out there that tells, especially solopreneurs and entrepreneurs, this is the prescribed way to be, right? You have to have 5-figure months and you have to, you know, your work has to look like this. And it's like, you know, I have clients who are like, I just want enough. Is that okay? I'm like, yes, it's okay.
Whatever that means for them too, because like, as much as I want to 10x everything, there's some things where I want to like negative 10x.
Yes.
Well, Erin, I have heard a ton over the years about the Enneagram, and I don't honestly know anything about it. So what is it? And honestly, why should I pay attention to it?
That's a really great question. And The Enneagram is known as both a psychological and a spiritual tool for transformation. It's a way for us to name habitual patterns of behavior. And it is meant to be a place that we work out, that we practice, that we learn, that we evolve. I think today the Enneagram has gotten really popular as a place to sort of poke fun or enjoy personality archetype and has gotten away from sort of the practical application of it. And so I sort of think about the knowing like my personality through the lens of the Enneagram, like getting a gym membership. It's like, we might all do it in January. This is like a really, you know, good first step, but it serves me not unless I show up and use it. And so much of what we know culturally today about the Enneagram is the consumption around the gym membership. I'm going to just learn about the patterns of my personality and not actually do anything with them. But the intention of the Enneagram is a embodied, moving, livable model. It's the gym. And it gives me clarity around my patterns, who I am in the world, and what that workout regimen might look like for me and my particular needs, as a way to resource my wholeness, as a way to help me connect to my potential, what's already here, right? We know personality, regardless if you know it through the Enneagram or you know it through, you know, Myers-Briggs or the DISC assessment, it doesn't matter, right? It's all language. But we know personality is a combination of behaviors as a way to help us feel safe in the world. And we often develop it out of childhood. So here we are, healthy adults, and we're still using a lot of the same coping mechanisms that we used at a much younger age. And we sort of wonder why we get stuck or why we have the same patterns with the same people. And it's because they're conditioned, right? And sometimes we just need to do a little work around awareness to pay attention to what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. So I can ask myself, would I like to do this differently? And what would that look like?
That sounds incredibly healthy. And what I love about that too is there's not a lot of judgment about what one type is versus the other, or even just like stereotypes.
Right. Now, there is a lot of that in sort of modern Enneagram culture. Do not get me wrong. I think we've missed the way in that, because people will ask me, you know, which Enneagram type is best for this particular job or in this coupling? You know, if I'm this, what's my best partner? And my answer is always, we have the capacity for it all. That's the intention of the human experience. We've just lost our way to it, right? And so there is no one particular type that says you're going to be a better in this job or a better spouse or a better parent. It really has to do with your level of awareness to those things. How quickly can you recover when we inevitably misstep? Because we're human and we're always going to misstep, you know?
Right.
And so I think that's, for me, where all the grace comes from, all of the compassion comes from, is that we're all a lot more alike than we are different.
Oh, interesting. So when you say we've lost our way, do you think it's because we, and I say we as just society, we use the tool to prescribe and to really make it change easy as opposed to using it as something to expand our life?
I think it's twofold. One, we lose our way out of conditioning, right? So if we were to think about driving to the same place every day, right? If you drive to an office every single day, at some point your body says, or your brain says, this is familiar to me. I'm going to like turn on some rote responses and conserve some energy. And so you get to work and you're like, I don't actually remember getting on or off the highway today. Like, we get into these conditioned patterns, and the way we communicate, the way we problem solve, the way we roll our eyes at our spouse, right? All of those things are conditioned patterns of behavior too, that live in our subconscious, that our mind goes, oh, we've been here before. Let's reserve some resources because, man, who knows if we're going to have to, you know, forage for some food and need some additional tools, right?
Right.
And so we lose our way habitually because we sort of rely on the same coping tools over and over and over again. So in adulthood, it requires some waking up to old pattern. It's the idea of, I'm going to buy this white SUV, and now all of a sudden we see the white SUV, white SUV everywhere. We have to bring it back up into our consciousness. Those cars aren't just more readily available because we've decided that we want them. We just started paying attention to it again. And we can start doing that around behavior too. Oh, I problem solved this way. Oh, I'm constantly finding that I get frustrated when people question me at work. Why is that, right? We have to sort of wake up to that as a way to sort of put light back on our path and put light back on our choice. So I think that's one way we lose our way. Unintentionally, that's just sort of the way we're developed. And then I think we lose our way in adulthood when we start to excuse behavior. Oh, this is just the way that I am. Right. This is just who I am, instead of this is who I'm meant to be, or who I have the potential or the capacity to be. Mm. And my personal belief is that individuals are limitless, right? The brain is so powerfully adaptable for a reason. So you can teach old dogs new tricks.
Oh, good. I'll take a deep breath on that one. It's interesting because it sounds like, too, there in a way the Enneagram has been used not as the tool of examination for our behaviors in our life that it powerfully is, but more like a BuzzFeed quiz.
Oh, absolutely. And there's some joy in that, right? Like there is some fun in that. It's fun to do the silly things and to find the distraction and the entertainment in it. Mm-hmm. And yet it is no different than just paying my LA Fitness membership every month. You know, at some point it would do me a whole lot of good to just, you know, maybe go walk the treadmill every once in a while.
Right. So how did you discover the Enneagram and why did it speak to you?
Well, I've been doing personal and professional development for almost 2 decades. And so I had the immense privilege to have a lot of tools come across my path and be trained in several methodologies around development. And I discovered the Enneagram almost 13 years ago. And when I was introduced to it in a training, I was like, this is different. This is completely different than any tool I've ever looked at, because it wasn't just categorizing what I did and putting me in a box. It was helping me understand why I felt the need for me personally to be smaller and be more comfortable. And it just sort of blew my mind. I was like, oh, wow, this is for me, even though it was supposed to be for work. and I was in a major shift in my life and needing to do some of my own radical healing. And it was a tool that I was able to couple with therapy, with embodiment work, doing some really deep things. I just happened to be lucky enough to find a master Enneagram teacher who is also a clinical psychologist, who was this beautifully diverse human who had all of these different tools and modalities. And so I studied with her for almost 6 years, 2 years to be trained as a teacher within the Enneagram, and then another 4 years to study consciousness practices with her.
Oh, wow.
You know, releasing attachment and self-awareness and emotional intelligence. And it was the most profound community. It was hard to leave. You know, at some point she's like, you guys need to go do something, quit learning, you know, stretch your wings. And I'm so, so, so grateful for that time, because it poured back into me, filled a lot of, you know, sort of nooks and crannies in me that desperately needed some tenderness. And it couldn't have been more kismet, because not too shortly after that work, we discovered that my daughter, who was 2 at the time, was on the autism spectrum and needed an immense amount of support. And I had tools to pull from. I understood what I needed to do to emotionally regulate. I understood compassion and presence and awareness. And all of a sudden, parenting her became my gym, the place I had to work out. She's almost 7 now, and I often say that she's my greatest teacher. And so the Enneagram gave me the tool, and she gave me the practice with the tool. And now I just have this immense desire to share it with other people, because it has been so transformative to me as a person, but also as a mom.
Oh, wow. That's just amazing. And what I love about that too, Erin, is that you spent so much time wanting to truly understand and learn with a mentor, with someone who was alongside you. And you didn't just read a book and be like, I'm an Enneagram expert. Like you really poured yourself into it.
Yeah, and I think that's what's beautiful about the Enneagram is that it's best learned in community as our humans, right? Like our work happens when we sort of rub off our rough edges on other people. And that's where we practice. That's where we get stronger and more resilient is in community. Mm-hmm. And so much of our culture values sort of individualistic consumption, right? I can consume all of this information and that's enough, but there's no embodiment in that. And that's where Eleanor, my daughter, taught me the difference. I can know a lot, but practicing it, that looks really different.
And I imagine it feels entirely different too from just the book knowledge.
Oh my gosh. It's like, can somebody please write this out for me? Because there's a lot of days where I question my ability. And so cognition and knowledge aren't my tools. It is emotional and physical regulation. And the Enneagram teaches us that too. It teaches me how to trust my intuition, how to meet my own needs emotionally, how to ask for my own needs. So much of it is so much more foundational than just what I think or what I know.
So my understanding, very little that it is of this topic. I mean, you've illuminated so much, but what do the numbers mean? So yeah. I usually see like I'm an Enneagram 6 and I'm just kind of like, is this just code for people in the know or...
So the numbers are sort of the archetypal pattern, and they attach to a sort of core worldview, right? This is folks who might oscillate and say, we often say fixate. That's sort of the pattern I got most comfortable with. So I fixate as a type 7. And so that tells folks a little bit about my behaviors. Now, the challenge is, this is where things get really complicated, is that we're used to looking at the Enneagram as 9 personality archetypes. But there's actually 27 personality archetypes in the Enneagram. And so mistyping happens a lot because we're trying to oversimplify it. And so I'm actually what you call a social dominant 7. And what that means is that my instinctual pattern, my what was important to me in childhood development was belonging. I really learned that belonging was essential to my survival. That's what that social instinct teaches me. And I use the strategies, the habits, the behaviors that we see common in a type 7 as a way to facilitate my belonging. And it starts to give me pattern to name. For the purpose of softening, right? For the purpose of going, okay, what would it look like if I brought some more resources into this? I brought some more tools into it. Where we like to sit is, oh, I'm a 7, so I do this, this, and this. So getting to know your type is really helpful, but it is more complicated than just sitting in one of 9 buckets.
Which is why it took 6 years.
Yeah. And why a lot of people get mistyped. A lot of people, we look at behavior and we sort of forget that behavior is a learned skill and behavior is conditioned by so many things. And the Enneagram wants us to help us understand motivation. Why did I form that behavior in the first place?
Wow. I mean, that's all I can say is, wow, because it's so deep. It's I didn't know. And it's just like, just like, wow. I mean, 27 layers. So I'm assuming social is there's like 9 elements to that, 9 elements to dominant, and then the number itself.
Yes, you got it. So there's 9 archetypes and there's 9 types who value what we call self-preservation. So preserving self, resourcing self, taking care of the container of self. And there's 9 distinct ways that we'll go about doing that. The social is the belonging aspect. And then relational is, you know, sort of making my world smaller and problem solving intentionally through preference, right? Like I learn preference. I learn these people or these places make me feel more safe. So I'm willing to let go of these other things and focus on what's in front of me. And all of this is learned and influenced before the age of 11. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here we are, healthy adults, mm-hmm. and we're still kind of grooving on stuff that happened in middle school.
Right. So how does Enneagram like interact with other tools?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful because we can hold it up next to and put language to, okay, so I'm a seven, right? I fixate a seven, and I can understand how I move through things like emotional and social intelligence. Mm-hmm. I can understand what that might look like in a framework of healing and belonging, how that impacts me setting boundaries, right? Like it starts to tell me a lot about how I move in the world, which is especially why I like using it in business, mm-hmm. because it helps me to say, you know, why is it that I always have a hard time asking for the sale? Or why can't I get organized? Or why do I procrastinate all the time? Right? We can start to look at the behavior, and we can hold the archetype next to it, and we can maybe put some meaning to it. So we can solve for the meaning and not the behavior. And then it's just infinite tools that we can use to help solve for the meaning.
So when you're contrasting the behavior that you're witnessing with the archetype, does that create cognitive dissonance, or is it something different where it's like emotional dissonance?
I'm sure all of the above, right? I mean, I think it's so dependent on an individual's level of awareness and uh-huh. and what might influence them. But it does create patterns and habits that are unique to us. And that has to take into context so much more than the archetype itself, right? I have to take into consideration my environment, my cultural upbringing, my gender, my race, my identity, my socioeconomic status, my education level, all of those things too inform who we are. So it just reiterates again that there is nobody else quite like me and nobody else quite like you, even though we might fixate in the same behavior.
Oh, interesting. So when you understand that, then I mean, that's where compassion can come from.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Where like harmony and like common good, the greater
yeah.
good. I mean, does that all stem from that understanding?
I personally, yes. I mean, and that's really where I fell in love with the tool, is because it starts to help, I think, humanize even the folks in our life who may have hurt us, right? There's this beautiful video that I've seen, and I can't think of the name of the YouTube channel. It's like the Sustainable Human or something like that. And it's all rooted in sort of being environmentally conscious. Yet there's this one line that it's like, what has to happen in a world where we create the perpetrator and the perpetrated? And it just was so profound to me. That was so telling in terms of what I was understanding around the Enneagram, is that we're all the same. We're not that much different. And what has to happen to you versus me to create my experiences different than yours? And then I can have more grace for maybe what you've had to encounter that I maybe didn't because of certain privileges or the luck of where I was born or how I was born, right?
Yeah.
Even if it still leads to, you know, unhealthy choice, there is still room for humanity within that. And that to me is so powerful.
Yeah. Cause I mean, we started at that individual level of, you know, behavior change, mm-hmm. then to organizational development. But like, I can see why you might want to shove this aside if it could really truly impact society in a powerful way, if it was used appropriately.
Right. And so my background as a behaviorist is in social marketing, right? I am interested in affecting and influencing change for the good of community, to shift community, right? For positive impact. That's what we look at in public health. That's what we look at in community health. And so the Enneagram just laid smack right over top of that and said, yeah, we have the capacity for this to make effective communal change for the individual and for the collective. Because the individual is the collective and vice versa.
Right. Yeah. So I imagine taking something like a global pandemic and you overlay the tools of the Enneagram, do you start like seeing patterns and behaviors that you can then test and really explore on a deep level?
I'm sure there's so many areas, you know, that you could start to examine how personality, how choice and behavior, how motivation, but then also cultural conditioning and what we know to be true, systems, all of that do to help affect. And I think that's why you see so much divisiveness, because it's not just so cut and dry, right? There's right. so many complex layers that lead us to understand what's right, what's good, what's true.
It's funny because even as I asked that question, I started realizing what I was doing. Like I was just simplifying this complex process in order to understand. And so I'm just like, when you said that it is just, there's layers and layers of complication, it's like, yeah, you can't stereotype the types.
Yeah. Well, but it's such a hard thing to hold on to because everything around us wants to distill it down to good versus bad, right versus wrong, right?
Right.
We're conditioned that way. Instead of the zooming back and holding more of, you know, why is that good for them and not for me? And again, it can still lead us to choice and holding communal choice and all of that. But maybe we can arrive there with some compassion and some grace and less maybe malice or vitriol.
Right.
At least that's my hope in the world.
I'm right there with you. So interesting. Like, I don't even, my brain is just like all over the place right now because it's just like, I'm taking it all in and it's so fascinating. And it's just like, when you're presenting this to people who may be skeptical, like how do they usually respond after you spend minutes explaining what you've just explained?
I would say the part that ends up being the most effective for folks is when I can help them identify how they sit and move in the model, right? So helping folks identify the language of their type then starts to create the puzzle pieces for, well, oh, now I see maybe how I might connect to you. I really, really believe that the Enneagram is a tool for social and emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is rooted in a strong foundation of self-awareness. And so these two sort of connect beautifully together because the Enneagram is a way to put language quickly to my self-awareness. And then I can use it as a tool to practice emotional intelligence, right? Emotional intelligence is an embodiment. Yeah. And so, you know, it's that work. I think when I can help folks see a name clearly, the rest kind of starts to trickle open. Oh, okay, I get it. But if they can't find themselves in it, it can maybe feel overwhelming or too nebulous, too hard to sort of hold on to. So that tangible act, I think, is really important. And my personal belief is that should be really accessible. This is a complex model, and we've made it really hard for the everyday person to get access to this process, right? To get access to these namings. The books try to oversimplify it. You have to meet with a professional in order to know. We sort of hoard these secrets. And so that was kind of my purpose in stepping into social media and digital media was I want the naming work to be more accessible. And so creating a bunch of free resources for folks to step through it and be able to find their way. And then those people that want to do it faster, fine. You know, we can have a service for you that makes it faster. But I want everybody to be able to have the gift of naming patterns so that we can start the process of being really gentle on self.
Right. Because I imagine too, as a coach or a guide through this process, you are witnessing types and behaviors in someone, but you don't want to, I'm assuming, just flat out say, oh, based upon how you are presenting right now, you are a this.
Right.
Are you more guiding them to discover it on their own and to really embrace it?
Yeah. So if somebody is doing the self-discovery work, I have some tools to sort of take them through, start here, go here, go here, you know, watch this video, do this thing as a way to name it for yourself, right? And walk through it. If somebody's like, no, I want you to walk me through it, I want to get it done faster, then I sort of think about it like we're in a dressing room together and I'm going to hand you a couple of shirts. Ultimately, you have to try them on, you have to wear them, and you have to decide if it's a good fit. I'm never going to tell you what you are because I don't know you. Right. And it's unethical for anybody to do that because we're so conditioned to see the world the way we see the world. It's really hard to filter out our bias. Actually, by really hard, it's impossible. And so I very carefully want to make sure folks never feel like I'm telling them who they are or what they look like in the world. But I will give them enough tools and enough information to decide for themselves.
Oh, that's excellent. I love that dressing room analogy because it's like you can hand them the shirt. And if you think they look good in the shirt, but they feel horrible in it, what's the point?
Exactly. And I think tools should be the same way. I think business strategy should be the same way. I think healing should be the same way. There's infinite options. Right? We are in the biggest, you know, shopping mall you could imagine in terms of what I have available to me to try. And we get really conditioned in culture that there is a good way or a bad way or a right way or a wrong way, instead of there's 1,000 ways. Try one. If it works, use it till it doesn't work anymore. If it doesn't work, set it down and try something new.
I'm flashing back to your tagline on your website right now. Just get clear, get wild, get moving, because everything that you're saying is about that clarity in order to take action.
Yep. Yep. And being willing to say, I know this worked for you, but it doesn't work for me. I'm going to put it down and try something else.
Yes. Oh, I'm just so grateful for you right now, Erin, because it's just like, it's not that you're like, see, you can ignore those people over there, Chris. You know, they're wrong for you. It's just like, no, like I can actually listen to what someone is saying. And if I don't agree with it or I don't feel it, I don't have to tear them down. I can just say, you know what? I don't think that's for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's just so freeing.
And it's so healthy and so boundaried, right? We sort of think of boundaries like these hard lines in the sand, right, where oftentimes boundaries are just honoring who we are and what we need and being okay about how other people react to that.
So where do you recommend someone start with the Enneagram?
I think it really depends on, you know, how they like to consume information. If they're the kind of person that likes to watch something, then I would recommend, you know, watching something. If they like to read, I'd recommend getting a book. You know, if they like to consume or engage in community, you know, all of that, all of just honor who you are and how you like to consume information. And I'm happy to be sort of a catalyst to get you in those right places. And so that's the point of my Instagram page, Living the Enneagram, or my YouTube channel, Living the Enneagram, is a place for you to start to notice and pay attention and then connect to other resources as a way. Because like you said before, the Enneagram matches perfectly with other tools, right? It becomes a place to get aware. So if you are looking for books or you want to watch some videos or you want some podcasts to listen to, join me over at Living the Enneagram and send me a message. I will happily point you in directions. I have some free resources available, tons of panels that you can watch, all 27 types in action, just so many resources for you to take that first step in naming for you. And then once you've got the naming, the rest is infinite, right? And you can sort of curate your consumption as a way to really fuel that in a meaningful way.
Yeah. One of the phrases that you've used often is infinite. And so how do you navigate infinity?
That's a really great question. For me, it's a motivator. I think that's why I say it, right? Because so as I'm really into positive psychology, I'm finishing my PhD in organizational psychology. I just believe in potential. And what we know about the body is when I'm stressed, when I'm pinched, when I'm feeling negative, when I feel triggered, we lock up, right? We can feel a tightness in our shoulders and our chest, our arms clenched, and all of that puts our head down, right? We sort of start to scrunch down and look at the problem in front of me that I need to solve. And that is inherently limiting. It's a survival response, right? Let's lock down our resources and give as much attention to the small thing in front of me. What it doesn't do is tap into the human potential. And so a lot of positive psychology says, what is it like if you are to expand, to breathe, to open your chest, to relax your shoulders, and all of a sudden your head starts lifting up and you're looking at an infinite sky, right? And it's humbling because you sort of recognize, wow, I'm really small. There's so much. But then you also recognize, oh man, there's so much, right? And we know scientifically that a brain is more equipped to problem solve when I'm looking up and out than when I'm scrunched and looking down. And so I really believe in embodying that mindset of the infinite potential within me and around me.
That's excellent. Well, as we wrap up our time together, Erin, what's one thing you want listeners to take away from our conversation?
You're already good. You're already enough. You're already whole. And sometimes we just need a reminder of what that looks like for us, what that feels like for us, how I embody that for myself. And so the Enneagram could be a tool for you to sort of name what's missing. It's already there. We've just sort of lost our way to it. But it doesn't have to be. There's so many other things that we can connect to that might guide us in that way. It is one guiding light in a sky full of them, right?
Yeah, and an infinite selection.
Yes, exactly.
Infinity upon infinity.
Yes.
Well, final question for you, Erin. What book, podcast, or resource is currently blowing your mind right now?
Oh, this is such a good question. Thank you for asking this, Chris. I read this book a couple of times. So my master Enneagram teacher told me you should read a book first to read it, the second time to learn it, the third time to teach it. And so I'm on the third time reading this book. It's called Professional Troublemaker by Lovie Jones.
Yeah.
She's got a great Instagram page. She's got a podcast. She's TED Talks. This is her second book. She's phenomenal. But this book is so powerfully reminding me personally what it's like to live both a good and humble life with some audacity, right? With some with some power behind it. And I'm just so grateful for it. I highly recommend it if anybody has not read her work.
I hope you got a lot from this conversation with Erin. I certainly did. This was definitely an episode for me where I learned a lot and was able to work through my own skepticism. I encourage you to check out Erin's work on living the Enneagram. For me, I've been reading a book on the Enneagram called The Sacred Enneagram, and it's actually quite interesting. I've learned some things about it, about the history of the Enneagram and how old it is. Incredibly interesting and fascinating. I would also advocate that you explore not only the Enneagram, but how she reads a book and how you could read a book too. Pick a book and first, like she said, read it. Then read it again to learn it. Then read it a third time to teach it. It just blows my mind to think about what you're going to get through that process. I'm personally thinking about how I want to approach my reading list in 2022, and I think there might be something in this approach to reading it three times. I'm going to keep exploring that, but, you know, we'll see where it ends up. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.